Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Talk about sports.
I like it.
Sweet. Thanks, buddy.
The weekends in the ATL are busy, and there's always plenty of sports to talk about.
Radio on the weekends.
And that's what we're going to do.
Hell yes, we are.
This is the ATL Show, keeping you up to date on all the sports in Atlanta and beyond.
Sports don't stop, even on the weekends. The ATL Show with Abe Gordon is on.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Abe.
Good morning, Atlanta. Welcome in to the Abe TL Show here on a Sunday morning. Nice little rare edition pre-Falcons football here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We got you covered all day as we lead up to a Falcons game day. Well, it is a Falcons game day, but we lead up to the actual game in a couple of hours. I've got you until noon Eastern time. Following me, we will have the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Joe Patrick and John Fricke going to be hanging out with you for a couple hours. And then we get the official Falcons pregame show. Chris Goforth and Mike Johnson. That's going to be starting at 2 o'clock. And, of course, game day today is at 4 o'clock with the Atlanta Falcons hanging out in Denver, Mile High City, there to take on the Atlanta Broncos. I'm going to mention this a couple of times throughout the show here today, but I certainly want to invite everyone out to McCray's Tavern in Smyrna. I'm going to be there hosting a watch party. We're partnering with Bud Light there. We've got Falcons Chargers tickets we're going to be giving away. At halftime, we have a Kirk Cousins autographed item we're going to be giving away at halftime. There's Bud Light specials throughout the game as well. Make sure you're 21 if you're going to be partaking in that. And as always, drink responsibly. But McCray's Tavern in Smyrna, Freddie Falcon's going to be there. The cheer team's going to be there. So I've had a lot of fun at the previous watch parties. You know, my record's pretty good at the watch parties as well. I know the team took a loss. But that goes on Andy Bunker's record last week. My record is unblemished as a host of these watch parties, and we're going to look to keep it that way. 4 o'clock today at McCray's Tavern as we watch the Atlanta Falcons. And this is a big win for the Falcons. It would be a big win. It's a big game for the Atlanta Falcons. You got a bye week coming up. You are coming off a really rough performance against New Orleans. Disappointing showing. And you're looking to turn things around, and what better way to do it than against a pretty formidable opponent to make you feel good heading into the bye. I mean, look, any win would make you feel good heading into a bye, but to do it against a team that is dangerous in Denver, that would up the ante even a little bit more. And what I'm most looking forward to is Denver's got one of the better defenses in the NFL. I would say a top five defense in the entire league. I'm interested to see how the Falcons match up today, because whatever happened last week, you got to move on. It was not a great performance with the exception of the job done by Bijan Robinson. Overall, the Atlanta Falcons offense was below average, at least below the standard that they have set a week ago against New Orleans. But can they rebound today against Denver? Certainly, if you rebound and put some points on the board, you'd feel pretty good about an opportunity to win that game. Hawks in action tonight. They beat the Wizards Friday night, 129-117. They're doing pretty well so far in the NBA Cup. Dyson Daniels continues his tear, 25.6 steals. Trey and Jalen, 18 points apiece. Jalen Johnson was hovering towards a triple-double again, didn't quite get there. Big, and they're playing tonight against the Portland Trail Blazers. A buddy of mine's the voice of the Trail Blazers. He was talking to me the other day about Portland. Really good, young, talented team. And some days, and we've kind of seen this a little bit from the Hawks every once in a while, some days they're invested in the game and they're tough to beat. And I think we see that from the Hawks. That's what we saw Tuesday against Boston. Other days, they're just kind of not really there to play. at a high level. And they can get blown out. And so we'll see which Portland team we see tonight. Mike Tyson, Jake Paul Friday night, John Jones, Stipe Miocic last night. We're going to talk about those when we go outside the perimeter at 10:40. And Georgia, the Bulldogs, last night. And we're going to have a lot more of this in a couple of minutes. We're going to continue the Georgia discussion. They beat Tennessee 31-17. I would say that this was Carson Beck's best performance of the season. And I think it was a statement that the Georgia Bulldogs do belong in the national title discussion. And we've had questions throughout the season. Just how good can this team be? And we got a slight answer against Texas, at least from the defensive side of the ball. When they're there and when they're at their best, they can be a dominant unit. But we have had questions on offense for the Georgia Bulldogs, and those have remained all season long. And one of the questions was, can they play clean? Can someone step up to help Carson Beck? And you saw that a couple of times last night. And there were still mistakes. There were still drop passes. There were still big plays left out on the field. But the offensive line stepped up. The tight ends stepped up. And Carson Beck stepped up. And maybe to an extent, Mike Bobo stepped up and found a couple of plays that he liked that seemed to work as well. So the Georgia Bulldogs last night, first off, obviously an important win. If they lose that game to Tennessee, they're probably not going to find a way into the 12-team playoff. But with that win last night, they are now back in control, sitting pretty with a game against UMass, a game against Georgia Tech. And then we'll see. We'll see how the tiebreakers and things fall apart in terms of the SEC championship game. I've been saying it this whole time. I think they'd rather avoid the SEC title game. And yeah, they're going to have to deal with an opening round game. And hopefully that would be at home if they can get into the 5-6-7-8 range, which I would think they will. Tennessee will fall behind them. Potentially Indiana or Ohio State at some point will fall behind them. BYU is out. We're going to talk about that. They lost late last night. Kansas took care of business there. And so Georgia's going to be sitting pretty, I think, to host a first-round game. And then potentially, if they do go to the SEC championship game, if they do win it, they could find themselves with a first-round bye. But Georgia Bulldogs, I think, have re-entered the chat, if you will. That national championship discussion, look, Oregon looked valuable last night. And so there's an opportunity there. We'll see just how good Ohio State is, just how good Indiana is when those two teams meet up. We've already seen the Georgia-Texas thing. And so the teams that are ranked above Georgia, I don't think you sit there, certainly not Penn State. Sorry about that, Mike Connie. But I don't think you sit there and say that Georgia can't beat any of those teams. No, I think they can beat all of those teams. Now the question is, can you put it together at the right time for enough games to get that actually done? That's a different question. Because now that we've seen Georgia's offense do what they did last night, can they do it again? And I don't mean against UMass. I don't even necessarily mean against Georgia Tech, but you certainly need to see it then. We need consistency on both sides of the ball. We need that defense to continue to play at the level they did. 5 sacks last night. They need to play like they did last night, like they did against Texas. And same thing for the offense. All right, now that we've seen you play clean, play smart, have some big plays, can you do it again? And how many times can you do it again? Because if you bring both sides of the ball, you're going to feel pretty good about it. Again, we're going to talk more about the Georgia Bulldogs here in our next segment. We're also just going to kind of loosely recap the rest of the day in college football. Again, at 10:40, outside the perimeter, a lot of discussion about a big fight weekend that has taken place over the past couple of days. At 11 o'clock, we're going to take a look at Week 11 in the NFL. Who are the big games today? A lot of the action later in the day. Some of these early games, maybe an opportunity to take a nap. You know, if you woke up early and you realize, hey, Falcons kick is at 4 o'clock, not 1 o'clock, these 1 o'clock games might give you an opportunity to take a nap. But I will say this. there is one game that saves the 1 o'clock slate. I'll tell you which one at 11 o'clock. At 11:20, we'll break down the Falcons a little bit further detail. Tough matchup again with the Denver Broncos. Again, it's the Abe TL Show. I am Abe Gordon, your host today until noon right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, coming to you live today from the Kia Studios. If you want to continue the discussion when I'm not here in the actual host chair, feel free to do so on social media. On the Twitter/X at Abe Gordon, same handle on Blue Sky. And I got to start working that into the repertoire. I don't really post on Blue Sky yet. I don't have enough people that either follow me or that I follow. But I'm over there, and it looks fun and clean. And Threads so quickly became a disaster of a site because there was just no oversight to bots and all this other stuff. So I'm over at Blue Sky. I'm still using Twitter/X more than anything else. We'll see if we can share the love depending on what social media you're on. But again, at Abe Gordon on either one. So 404-726-0929 if you want to chat about the Georgia Bulldogs. What made the difference for you last night? I think, and we talked about this, I talked about this yesterday during college football game time. Everyone wants to blame one specific aspect for the Georgia offense being subpar this season. It's all Carson Beck's fault. It's all Mike Bobo's issues. The receivers aren't good enough. They drop passes. They don't get open. What's up with this offensive line? It was supposed to be one of the best in college. It hasn't been anywhere close. And the reality is, it's not any one specific issue offensively. It's the combination of all four of those. Have the receivers and tight ends been good enough? No, absolutely not. Has Carson Beck been good enough? Also, no, absolutely not. Is Mike Bobo doing what he can to maximize the offense? Probably not. And all of it, at some point, is going to circle back to the offensive line. And I forgot one, the run game. The run game's not good enough. You don't have an alpha. You don't have something you can rely on. Certainly not when Trevor Etienne is hurt. But even still, I mean, there's a lot of factors that drive you to the Falcons offense not being at its best. Here's the thing. Some of those still popped up yesterday. I still don't think the run game's good enough. You still had issues dropping passes. I mean, costing you big plays. The first play of the game should have been a 50-yard gain. Instead, it was a drop pass. Not necessarily saying it was the most wide open in the world, but you had the hands on the ball. Should have been done. You had a touchdown that was dropped. Is it a tougher catch? Sure. But it should have been caught. And so there's still some issues. But what we saw last night from the Georgia Bulldogs, I would say, is their best offensive performance of the season. Why do you think it happened last night? 404-726-0929. Maybe it's because they were back at home and they're playing in the comforts of Sanford Stadium. That could be part of it as well. We're going to hit a break here, and when we come back, more discussion of the Georgia Bulldogs. A huge win in terms of the course of the season for Georgia. What did we see last night that got them rolling against the Tennessee Volunteers? Also, what else has changed in the landscape of the college football playoffs? Some of these games last night, some of the results yesterday, had large impact on how many teams the SEC may get in, how many teams other conferences get in, who's still available for an at-large, and who needs to win a conference championship if they're going to get in. All that and more as we continue. It's Abe Gordon. It is the Abe TL Show right here on a Sunday morning on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to Abe Gordon with the Abe Show.
Believe it. On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back into the Abe TL Show. It's Abe Gordon here live in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. And we are all counting down until Falcons kick later today. I'm going to be with you until noon. We're going to talk a lot more of the NFL and the Falcons in the 11 o'clock hour. A little bit of college here coming your way in just a moment. But again, full day of Falcons coverage. Wait for it, tailgate show, the official Falcons pregame after that. Wes and Dave will have the call for you. And then the flyover deeper into the evening. If you're hoping to listen to the Atlanta Hawks, they're going to be on V103 today, starting at 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock tip. They are out west against the Portland Trail Blazers. So we'll have Falcons for the full day here on 92.9, and the Hawks will be on V103. And again, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, join me at McCray's Tavern in Smyrna, an official watch party, and Bud Light's going to be there. Make sure to drink responsibly. Freddie Falcon's been hanging out. He's causing havoc every time he shows up, man. I'll tell you what, I don't know what to do with that fella. The cheer team is going to be there as well. So we got a couple things we're auctioning off, raffling, if you will, not an auction. You can sign in and try and win Falcons tickets to the game against the Chargers or an autographed Kirk Cousins item. All right, back to the world of college football, the Georgia Bulldogs. And again, backs against the wall last night, kind of essentially an elimination game. If you're the Bulldogs, I don't think you're getting in if you lose that game last night to Tennessee. They didn't. 31-17 against the number 7 team in the land, the Tennessee Volunteers. And Georgia's path forward now is pretty simple. If they keep winning, they're in. I mean, they are locks to be in to the 12-team playoff. And this is why I wasn't worried about where the Bulldogs are ranked or where they stand, any of that stuff in terms of the college football playoffs. Like they knew, hey, you win over Tennessee, you're right back into the numbers that you need to be, and then you keep winning, and you're going to be there. You lose to Georgia Tech, you're going to be out. And it's that simple. So keep winning, and you're going to be in that playoffs. There's no doubt about that. They are a lock if they stay the next couple of games without a loss. Carson Beck last night, 25 of 40, 347 yards, 2 touchdowns, and probably more important than the 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. A clean game. And I know we had been asking for this, and it comes in a manner of a couple of ways, right? First, they didn't protect him. And I don't mean the offensive line. I mean the offensive play calling. They did not protect Carson Beck. They let him open it up. And I've been waiting to see that a little bit more. The other thing, people stepped up to help him. We'll get to them in just a moment. And then the third thing, and I had suggested this to Garrett Chapman, part of College Football Game Time. I actually said this a couple of weeks ago, but before the loss last week to Ole Miss, but certainly after. You got to let Carson Beck run. This is a mobile guy, an athletic guy, a big guy, and there's more he can do for your team on offense. And I think we saw that last night, a couple of first down conversions, eventually a touchdown run as well. Carson Beck, I don't remember if he actually got in. He got close. Carson Beck's legs were important yesterday. There's no doubt about that. And it gives teams something else to consider when he's taking the snap. And so you got that. The other aspect that led to Georgia, 31-17. And let me say this. Tennessee hadn't given up 20 points to anyone. They had not allowed 20 points to anyone this season. And that was the number. We said if Georgia can get 21-24, you got to feel pretty good about them winning this game. They got to 31. This was their best offensive performance of the season. I'll get more into detail on why in just a moment. And despite giving up 17 points to Tennessee, I thought it was a pretty good defensive performance. They limit Dylan Sampson to 101 yards. One of those was a kind of long touchdown run. And without that, it would have been certainly under 80 or so. Nico threw 33 times for 167 yards. That's not going to be good enough if the SEC's top running back is only at a buck 01. And so the Georgia Bulldogs defense did rise to the occasion. Five sacks on Nico last night. And on the flip side, how about that offensive line for the Bulldogs? Zero sacks taken. And that is a huge swing from what we saw the week prior against Ole Miss. And I'm not a huge surprise by that. I've been saying it all week. Tennessee's got a good defense. Tennessee's got a good front. They don't rush the passer specifically the way that Ole Miss does. So the offensive line stepped back up. And you want to know who stepped up? How about the tight ends? Oscar Delp, four catches, 56 yards, two touchdowns. Ben Jurecek, five catches, 51 yards. And Lawson Lucky, one catch for 23 yards. Carson Beck and Mike Bobo found matchups with the tight ends that got open. And some of the receivers were doing their jobs as well. The other thing that was most impressive about the offense for the Georgia Bulldogs last night, no easy scoring drives. They didn't really – they did well defensively in terms of stopping Tennessee, but really until the end of the game, the final couple of moments when they got a sack fumble against Nico, they really didn't do a ton in terms of getting turnovers. And there were no easy scoring drives. Like, the defense didn't set the offense up. In order, here were the scoring drives for the Georgia Bulldogs. 75 yards. 84 yards. 87 yards. And 92 yards. Those are your four touchdown drives. All 75 plus. Two of them, 85 plus. And so the Georgia Bulldogs put on, based on what they've shown this year, really an absolute clinic from them offensively. Carson Beck had it going. You'd still like to see a couple more big plays, guys open necessarily. I don't know how many guys are actually open down the field. But they found ways to make it work, an impressive 31-17 win. And like we said for the Georgia Bulldogs, they continue to win games at this point, they're going to be in. They are absolute locks. I'm interested to see where they get ranked. I think there's potential for them to be as high as maybe six. I'd have to go back and look and see if they can crack the top five. Penn State, Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State, Texas feels like those are your five in whatever order. Could Georgia jump up to six? Probably not. They're probably still going to have Alabama six. And could Georgia jump up to seven? Now you start to talk a little bit. Ole Miss probably has to be above Georgia, so maybe eight. But the point is Georgia will be safely in the top 12 when the rankings come out in a couple of days. All right. The ATL show here live on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Also anywhere you take your phone on the Odyssey app. There were other games, believe it or not. I know we talked a lot about Georgia-Tennessee. It's where College Game Day was. It was certainly the premier game of the day. But there were other games that had big impacts on the college football playoff and what that field might look like. And the first one of those was essentially the last game of the night. Kansas at BYU. BYU was the number six seed. They were ranked number six. They were as high as the three seed there. But they fall out as Kansas beats them 17-13. And the big thing that tells you right now is there was an opportunity for the Big 12 to be a two-bid league. If BYU was 12-0, they go into the conference title game and lose. There was a potential that they still would have been a two-bid league. That's gone. The Big 12 is a one-bid league right now. Whether it's BYU or whether it's Arizona State, whether it's Colorado, whether it's – I don't know who it's going to be. But I know – at least it appears that it's a one-bid league that's going to open up an extra spot somewhere, and it seems pretty safe at this point unless we get some real unexpected results that both the Big Ten and the SEC are going to be getting four teams in. Oregon, number one Oregon, on the road at Wisconsin, 16-13. The Ducks do survive. And we had talked about this over the course of the week. The one thing Oregon had not done all season is not bring it. They hadn't had one of these games where they're kind of sleepwalking a little bit and they really got to fight to survive. That was last night, and they still came out on the winning end. They were missing Jordan Birch, one of their top pass rushers, but impressive for Oregon to win 16-13. They're going to remain number one, and they're going to remain on a path towards the Big Ten title game. Number 22, LSU at Florida. Florida handles them 27-16. The defense for the Gators continues to play inspired under Billy Napier. The return of DJ Lagwe was the difference on offense. And believe it or not, and they're not there yet, but believe it or not, the Florida Gators could go to a bowl this year. They are one win shy of bowl eligibility. They got Ole Miss coming up. That's going to be a tough one. But at the final week of the season, as it always is, Florida against Florida State. And the Florida Gators are going to enter that game as favorites. I would imagine decent favorites. And if they can beat Florida State, the Florida Gators, despite having the toughest schedule in all of college football, could get six wins and could go to a bowl. Utah at number 17, Colorado. Deion gets it done with help from Shador and certainly from Travis Hunter. 49-24. This game was tight. There was a late breakaway score-wise. And Travis Hunter took a huge step towards securing the Heisman. He had an interception and a decent return there. He also had a touchdown on a really, really athletic, uber-athletic play on an end-around where he had to cut back inside. Very nice play. Did the Heisman pose a couple of times last night. It feels like he's moving and trending in that direction. I think Deion called the play just to get him an offensive touch near the goal line. I think certainly that helped. Three games this year with an interception and a touchdown. That is crazy. Texas at Arkansas. Texas wins 20-10, but it was not overly impressive. So the questions about them and their resume are going to remain. Number 20, Clemson at Pitt. Crazy final couple minutes. I don't want to spoil too much of it. Clemson won 24-20, but if you want to go back and look at the final swings of those games, Cade Klubnik got it done late. Also a crazy finish was Missouri and South Carolina. I think three times in the final two or three minutes, you had a lead change, but South Carolina ends up on top in this one, and they've been playing very good, and that offense for the Gamecocks has gotten going. Lenora Sellers, five touchdowns for the quarterback there yesterday. Very impressive performance. And SMU keeps rolling, 38-28 over Boston College. And so they are trending towards potentially being the ACC's representative in the college football playoffs. Of course, they're going to have to win the ACC title game. Whoever's going to get in from the ACC, I don't think there's going to be any at-larges. Miami can't afford another loss. Clemson and SMU certainly aren't getting in as at-larges either. That is what happened in college football. But again, the big stamp of the day was by the Georgia Bulldogs, a performance that makes you start to bring them back into the national title conversation. And look, maybe for some of you, you never had them out. I needed to see more of a complete performance before I thought they were going to step onto a field with Ohio State or Oregon or whomever it may be, Alabama again. I think we saw that last night. And so they certainly, in my opinion, re-enter the national championship conversation. They got UMass and Georgia Tech to wrap up the regular season. They win those games. They should be in the college football playoff. And then it gets wonky if they have to play for a title game, if they can afford a loss there or not. We'll let the committee decide on that one. When we come back, we're going to go outside the perimeter. Some of the top national sports stories, headlines, and topics here on the Abe TL Show. It is a big and has been a big fight weekend. We'll talk about what happened Friday night. We'll talk about what happened last night and a couple of other stories in the NBA as well. That's what's coming up next. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, we turn our attention to the NFL. We're going to do all that and more as we continue here till noon. It's Abe Gordon, the Abe TL Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
It may be the Abe TL Show, but it's bigger than just Atlanta. It's time to go outside the perimeter.
Banning the globe.
On the Abe TL Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back into the Kia Studios here. Abe Gordon and the Abe TL Show. Getting you ready for a Falcons game day. I'm here till noon. We got a lot of NFL to talk in our next hour. But right now we go outside the perimeter, OTP, some of the top national sports stories, headlines, and topics. And I think we have to start with what happened on Friday night, deep into the night, by the way. And I knew that was going to be an issue for some. Jake Paul and Mike Tyson, the Netflix fight of the century, if you want to call it that. Hopefully you had an opportunity to see it. I know a lot of people had issues pulling up the fight. But, there were some problems. But in the end, Jake Paul defeats Mike Tyson. And we'll get to the fight itself in just a moment. I want to start with Netflix's handling of things. I want to start with the timeline for this fight as well. I think there are a lot of people who tuned in that thought they were going to watch Tyson and Paul fight at 8 p.m. And look, I watch a lot of fighting. I was watching UFC last night. We'll get to that in a moment. I saw the fight card, and I knew people were going to be like, when are we actually going to get to this fight? It was late. There's no doubt about that. But Netflix had its own group of issues, and they better figure them out before they handle the NFL on Christmas Day. And they've had a couple of lower tier sporting events that I thought maybe they would have figured it out, but the servers crashed. There's no doubt about that. The servers had issues. I got to a point, and the production also had issues, they had a microphone issue, stuff like that. That's not going to happen with the NFL because they got a better production team, quite frankly. But I could not get the stream to play consistently on my TV. So I went with my phone. And I had a much higher success rate with it not buffering, not loading, not freezing, with the quality still being watchable. I had to do it on my phone. The TV was just giving me too many issues. The servers, you figure that out. I mean, look, you're talking about 65, potentially as high as 65 million people, I think was the release that they put out there yesterday. 65 million viewers is what they're saying, and it quite frankly, it's probably more than that because you got multiple people watching on one device, etc. If they gathered and you had a watch party, something like that. So they got to figure it out because it's probably not going to be 65 million, and I don't know if that number is accurate either. That seems like it's quite high. But I guess that's probably worldwide, not U.S. only, but who knows. But look, when it gets to the actual fight, and Noel is with me here today. If you have any thoughts, feel free to pop in also. The fight ended up being what it was always going to be. And I know there was this group, a large group, I would say almost unanimous majority of people that fell victim to Tyson nostalgia, and they couldn't bring themselves to believe that he would look like a 58-year-old. They thought, because they saw him go after pads in 10-second bursts, that he could still crack. That he was going to go in there and put Paul down 35 seconds into this fight. That was never happening. And so what we got from this fight was, for the most part, what I expected. There was one difference I'll get to in a moment, but it was mostly what I thought would happen. Now, I will say this. Maybe Tyson still has a little bit of power, but by the time you got midway through the second round, though, he wasn't going to carry it. I will say this. He does have a little bit of a chin still. He can take a little bit of a pop. Paul hit him a couple of times early in that fight, and it became obvious that Tyson started to look old about the third round. And again, these are 2-minute rounds. They were designed to keep Tyson able to go. it still didn't matter. By the third round, he was not going to put Jake Paul in danger. And, you know, I saw this online. I don't remember where I saw it, but it was kind of a relation to the 58-year-old boxer type thing. And Willie Gault, former NFL receiver and former U.S. Olympic sprinter, he has the 100-yard dash, 100-meter dash, the 100-meter record for men 55 and older. And the record that Willie Gault set is 11.3. 11.3 is incredibly impressive. It is wildly fast. There's also thousands of high schoolers that can beat 11.3. Like, that's just the reality of being an elite at one time and then how far away from elite you are at 55 years. And Tyson there at 58. And I will say this. Jake Paul took it easy on Tyson. And a lot of people may not want to believe that. A lot of people are still stuck in nostalgia and want to make excuses for the fight. Jake Paul took it easy on Tyson in the middle and late rounds of this fight because I think he realized that Tyson was not a danger or a threat by the third or fourth round. And I think he could have hurt, he could have punished, and he probably could have knocked out Mike Tyson and chose not to. I think he realized he was not a threat and chose not to go for the kill. And look, I can respect that as well. Jake Paul doesn't want to be seen putting an old man down. I think he understood where they were in the fight. He's a big Tyson fan. I think he respects Tyson. I think if you saw the interviews in the post-fight, it should have been obvious. And I know Jake Paul came out later after the fight and said, yeah, I didn't really go for it. He could have gone for it. So to an extent, respect for him. A lot of people are just going to sit here and say, well, like, Jake Paul couldn't even put a 58-year-old down. No, he chose not to, man. Like, just be realistic. And here's the other thing I learned on Saturday night. Excuse me, on Friday night. There are a lot of people who watch that fight that don't watch boxing, like, at all. And I don't have a problem with that. But, like, man, social media went wild during the Katie Taylor-Amanda Serrano fight. And it was a pretty fun fight, good co-main event. Obviously marred a little bit by headbutts, questionable scoring. And boy, that's the other thing. If you wanted to really show most of America what boxing's all about, go watch that fight and go watch that scoring. I mean, Katie Taylor had a point deducted. In my opinion, didn't win the fight anyways, and then somehow gets a decision. A wild scoring affair on that one. But the other thing that kind of took me by surprise was everyone's reaction to the cut over the eyebrow for Amanda Serrano from the headbutts. And I don't know, like, maybe I'm desensitized because I watch so much boxing, because I watch Power Slap, because I watch so much mixed martial arts, UFC, Muay Thai, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu events. I didn't think the cut was that bad. Like, it was it's obviously not a good cut, but it's in a pretty decent spot. It certainly wasn't bleeding into her eye. It's coming on the outside, and so it's not going to impact her vision too much. And the eye wasn't closed. And so definitely saw a lot of people overreact to that cut, in my opinion. And it kind of told me that a lot of people aren't watching the fights very often. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Noel, did you... Were you tuning in on Friday night to watch the Tyson-Paul match?
Absolutely not. And for everything that you said. See, I understand the
trap. You didn't want to see it like that.
I understand the trap of nostalgia, and I saw that for exactly what it was.
Yeah, it did turn sad to a point, and I think that's why Jake Paul made the decision not to go after it, because it could have gone from sad to something you like really don't want to watch,
right?
Which is a grandpa put down. And Jake Paul took it very easy at that point. And he was still boxing. He has to still do what people are tuning in for. But he wasn't going for the kill. There were certainly moments he could. And I think people realize, like I said, third or fourth round, Roy Jones Jr. started to talk about the legs of Tyson, and he wasn't moving very well. He was stiff, stuff like that. Roy Jones Jr. pointed it out. Now, he pointed out the exact same thing 28 times. And it's like, do you have another way to say that he looks old? Or just, man, I don't like his legs. But it was surprising to me how many people really thought Tyson was going to go in there and put in that work. And it just, to me, was never going to be that.
But you live in reality, Abe. Like,
I also watch a lot of fighting. I watch a lot of fighting.
And true also, like you're kind of desensitized to what boxing is for people that haven't watched it in 30 years, but also, like, you're just realistic, right? So you went into this going, okay, the age matchup, the body matchup, the things we already know about Tyson and his body, maybe not. But Netflix and the powers that be, they knew nostalgia was going to win out, right? Like, that was the whole point. Like, to me, Jake Paul putting Tyson down really wasn't the point, right? That, to your point, it would have made it something else, something not fun to watch. Takes the shine off of it. The point was to go out there, put on a show, a razzle-dazzle, box. Like, you got to put the actual energy into it. But the point was to get that nostalgia money, and they're going to try.
Well, see, I don't think that was the point. I think, and this is where you get into, like, that mind over matter, and I'm like, no, man, like, just because you think doesn't mean you can do.
True.
I think Tyson legitimately thought he was going to go in there
Tyson,
and put it in.
Yes. I don't think anybody else thought that.
There were a lot of people who thought that. Because Tyson thought it, they thought it, and I'm just like, I don't know, man.
Like, I definitely saw it from the fan side of things, everybody buying into Tyson. But the powers that be, that they knew what this was really going to be.
Sure.
And that's what they wanted.
And I think realistically I think Jake Paul got what he thought it was going to be, but he had to be careful early on because he wasn't sure.
No, I agree. You got to test the waters with it, kind of see where, you know, Tyson is.
And I do think Tyson was dangerous early on, by the way. And I think he was always going to be dangerous.
I think Tyson has
about 45 seconds he can still go. But if he didn't hit you in that 45, and he didn't, and this was part of having a larger ring that Jake Paul was able to use his speed and movement to his advantage, he ran away. There was one point in the first round where Jake Paul was running away from Mike Tyson. The problem was after that, Tyson had expended everything he had, and there just wasn't anything there. He stopped moving, and then Paul kind of just went with mostly jabs, a little bit of a hook, and no real power punches, at least not to Tyson's head from that point forward. But, yeah, I mean, the amount of people that, like, showed Jake Paul's pad work and then put it next to Tyson's pad work, and it was like, look at Tyson go. He's going to murk this guy. I'm like, no, man.
Yeah, that's not
You're watching 10-second clips of pad work, man. Like, anyone can look good for 10 seconds. You got to do this for, bro, this
for
is,
rounds.
What, 18 minutes, I guess? Or what do they have? Eight rounds for two? So, yeah, 16 minutes of fighting? That's a long, I mean, people who never fought, that's a long time.
That's a long time.
And Tyson gassed out, and that was that. Real quick, as we wrap up outside the perimeter, John Jones beat Stipe Miocic last night, UFC 309. Kind of a mildly similar situation. Stipe looked dangerous early on in the first round. He got winded, and that's also just like John Jones is still that dude. There's no doubt about that, but... John Jones is going to be under pressure to fight Tom Aspinall, and I know he said he's not going to. We'll see if that's the path forward, but it's a bad look. Like, we're going to be honest. It's a bad look for John Jones to win the title and then run from the interim champ. So we'll see what happens there. Real quick in the NBA, Cavs 14-0, chance to go 15-0 up there in Cleveland tonight. And inside the NBA, it's going to move and be licensed out to ESPN. More details on how that's going to work next week. All right, it is the Abe TL Show. It is a Falcons kickoff Sunday coming your way. We're going to look at the rest of the Week 11 NFL schedule. Like I said, one game saves the entire 1 p.m. slate. I'll tell you which one it is. And then later in the hour, keys to the game for the Atlanta Falcons. All that coming your way and more on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. In the Odyssey app.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.